You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 522, with John and Sam. John and Sam. Let's go.
Hello, it's Dr. Disco.
You just call yourself Dr. Disco.
No Adam tonight because Adam is working on – he's being diligent and he's doing something for the site for once. And he is getting the best of end-of-year lists ready for the readership. I think they might even post like this week. So I don't even know if you're going to hear this before or after they post. I always love the end-of-year things. Adam is always like, what's the point of end-of-year thing? No one cares about what we think back. Some people do care. And more importantly, the writers care. Sam, end-of-year lists. I love doing them. Do you like doing the end-of-year lists?
I like doing them only because it's for me and no one else. So maybe it's a selfish reason, but I don't care.
That's fine. I mean, for me, I don't feel as though I'm doing a public service by listing my top 20 records, but I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy having people read what I think. Do you feel that way, or do you feel differently?
No, I think I feel the same. It's I like – one, I like lists, so making a list is fun. I do think it's nerve-wracking because, you know, I listen to so many things this year, and every year I have to, like, actually put it in a form, like, you know, in order of how I feel or what I like or whatever. And then the actual, like, you know, I guess, because I don't do reviews, reviewing of it or it's explaining why I like it is usually a problem for me. So, but you know, I get it done every year. I do like doing it. That's why I continue to do it. If not, then I wouldn't do it at all. Cause really it's for me.
Sam, you bring up two interesting points. The first is you talk about how you don't do reviews. You've been Punk Newsing now for 10 years or even 15 years, but you've never really – maybe you've done like one or two reviews here or there. Why don't you like doing reviews? Is it just something you don't like doing? Is it that you don't like, I guess, quantifying art, which is inherently non-quantifiable, unquantifiable? What's the reason you never really chose to dive into reviews and have stuck to news, if you will?
Because I don't like being the one that tells you your stuff stinks or your stuff is great. You know, I was like, I have a lot of bands that I love and, you know, I would have to say sometimes they don't put out the best things. So, I don't want to be the one that says it really, really sucks. 'Cause you know, I just don't like taking that, let's just say criticism well, so I just stay away from reviews altogether. I think news is just like, you know, news is news. It's you take the information and you just regurgitate it, right? Make it consumable in some way. We're just like relaying information. So it's for me, it's just like easier for me to do that. I don't think I've done any reviews besides like maybe festival reviews and stuff like that. I know my husband did a couple of reviews. He's a lot better at it than I am. when it comes to music and me, it's, you know, I do have attachments to things, like, you know, certain albums for me are a time and place type of thing. So, you know, I may feel differently about this album because I have attached emotional, you know, things to it than maybe someone else would, you know.
Do you dislike reviews inherently, or you just don't want to be the messenger of bad news, the bearer of bad news?
I don't like being the messenger of bad news. I don't think reviews are the worst thing. I do like reviews, reading reviews, especially if it's, like, you know, written by people that does it all the time or does it very well, like, you know, Brian Schultz, when he was around, did reviews, like, I loved his reviews. So, you know, but it's, whenever you do write a review, you do have to, like, you know, you have to own up to it. And, you know, these are your feelings. These are things that you think. I also do think that if you're writing a review, you need to take a look at, I guess, the band's history in order to make sense of it. Because, you know, sometimes bands may want to write, you know, an art project, like an art concept album, and it may not be good at all, right? But, you know, it might be good. I don't know. We'll see.
Brian Schultz, old punk news. I don't know if he was ever, was he a news guy, or he was a news guy, not a reviews editor, or was he? No, he was a reviews editor before Joe Pallone, Brian Schultz, right?
Yeah, he was, he did reviews. He did a lot of reviews. I know Brian, so, I've known him from the Long Island, New York, you know, scene out here. So, many, 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 many moons ago. I still know him. He's fine. but yeah, no, you know, he is a delightful human being that writes very, very nice things.
Brian famously has very fact-specific reviews, and then he kind of, almost like Roger Ebert style, he lays out the facts, and then he talks about if he feels the facts were effective. Actually, you bring up two more interesting things that I really do want to get into. I can't remember what the second thing that I was thinking of was, though. Oh, no, here's what it was. Sam, you do – reviews is the easiest way to, I guess, get out in front of the public readership in punk news. If you write reviews, people sort of know who you are, right? You do news. And you're not on the podcast a ton, although hopefully you'll be on more often. It seems maybe you're going towards that way. Do you not enjoy being in the public eye, and you like just working, pulling the strings from the back end? Or do you want to become a F-list celebrity?
I do not need to be an F or an S or a Z-list celebrity. I do like doing things on the back end. I do like, you know, just doing what I do. I don't necessarily need a million friends. I also do not need a million people following me. You know, so I'll just keep it that way.
There you have it. Sam Barrett doing it for the love of the punk and not the accolades, awards, and status that it can sort of kind of maybe bring. One other thing, Sam, and then we'll actually, I've got another thing I want to talk about that's totally BS, but one other thing I do want to talk about is you talked about doing your list. Adam White and I were kind of debating this or butting heads on the podcast a few episodes ago, and this is a thought that's been going around this past year. This year, of course, was coronavirus, and so it was tough on a lot of bands. It was tough on a lot of people. A lot of publications said, we're not going to rank things this year because, we've, you know, why put bands against each other in this difficult year? And Adam, I don't know what Adam's going to do. Adam might be actually walking back on his perspective, but he was saying, well, I'm not going to rank them either. I don't think it's fair to rank them, you know. Well, you can't rank art. I disagree with that philosophy, and I think if a website was going to rank things and they didn't rank it, I think that's cool because a website is like a collective, like, this is our opinion. So I think it's cool not to rank things in that context. But if you're individual lists, I think you should rank them because you're saying, these are my favorite things. You can have a favorite thing without it, you know, looking bad for all the other bands that you're talking about. And I do think excellence should be rewarded. And also, I think that if you kind of say, well, if I rank them, that's, you know, putting bands against each other. I believe that's kind of giving yourself a lot of self-importance that, like, oh, your opinion matters so much that if you put this one at number six, not five, then it's going to shatter that band's belief in themselves. I can't buy into that. Sam, what's your perspective on the – we should not rank things on both a collective, you know, like a website-wide list and a personal list. Do you have a stance, or maybe you don't have a stance?
So I do think ranking is a thing. Right. I was like, you know, historically on Punk News, these end of the year lists, we've always ranked them. You do have, like, you know, when I'm doing my list, I do have clear winners. Like, you know, I know this is going to be my number one album and, you know, things like that. And I do remember seeing in past lists from other people, like, you know, if you can't figure out that, you know, what is one or what is two or whatever, like, you know, some people has put down ties. So you might have like two number threes or something like that, which is really a three and a four. Like, you know, things like that. So I do think that ranking, especially with our lists, is a thing that we do, but that's only out of a historical, I guess, aspect of what we do. I think if we wanted to make a collective, all of us not rank and just like list a top 20 albums that we listened to this year that we really, really dig, I think that is something that we can do. But, you know, it's just easier to rank if we were going to do like an end of the year wrap up, right? Because we need data, we need numbers in order to figure out the math and the algorithm. I personally don't, I like ranks, but I don't necessarily need it if, you know, that's where we're going. I do think that this year COVID has taken a hit on, you know, our music scene. I was like, you know, most bands put out albums, some of these albums we will never see a tour out of, right? I was like, you know, some bands are already making a second or a new album because, you know, what are you doing under COVID times? You're just sitting at home and making things, or, you know, so, you know, we may never see something that comes out of this. So I do think that creating a list will, I guess, for us, celebrate it in a way. So, you know, it doesn't get forgotten. Maybe that's just me selfishly saying that because I have the opportunity and the privilege to make a list that gets widely shared amongst the interwebs forever and ever and ever. But, yeah, anyone can make a list, and everyone should make a list if they want to.
Well said, well said. I agree. I like making lists. Like, I think for me, it's almost like I just love the number one. It's like, this record is super exceptional and says a lot about this year or this generation or whatever. And that's how I always treat my number one. So I'm excited for the list. I love the list. And actually, you know, this week on the podcast, we're kind of just cleaning house because next week is going to be the end of year episode, which is always one of my favorite episodes of the year, where all of us get on, we talk about the year, we play some of our favorite tracks. That's next week. That's might be my favorite episode of the year, tied perhaps with the Christmas episode. And Sam, let's just wrap about the Christmas episode briefly. We did the Christmas episode last week. That episode starred Adam White PI going on a noir mission looking to find the big man. When we recorded it, I wrote it, and Sam famously reprised her Hermie the Elf character, probably my favorite character that we had on any of the Punk News Christmas episodes. And I wrote it, and when we were recording it, I was like, eh. Maybe it sounds a little flat. I'm not sure. But then I put in the sound effects, and I thought the Christmas episode this year, honestly, is pretty good. I thought last year was really good, too. I think this year is maybe tied for last year. Sam, what was your perspective on the Christmas episode? Are they fun? Are they stupid? Are they both? Should we keep doing them, or are we just hearing ourselves and the listeners don't want them at all? I enjoyed doing them.
So I love your enthusiasm and your creative effort for every Christmas episode. I would have to say that this year's was casted very well. I think everyone that played a part in it did a very, very good job playing their role in it. Because, you know, there was, you know, I had a couple of, you know, people that I had to play, including myself, my jaded self. so I do like these Christmas episodes. I do think that it's something fun, something festive, you know, that even, like, you know, I don't write it, you write it, but just reading parts of it and then having something, I'm just going to call it ridiculous, out in the interweb with my voice in it is actually nice.
That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to keep doing them for well, as far, I mean, I love doing them, and so I think we're going to do them every year. Two questions from that. I used to really make it a point to make the Christmas episodes very G-rated, like almost like weirdly G-rated. Like the first one, we did like a Bing Crosby special, and it was so like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. It was so gentle and bright and made for 7 p.m. TV circa 1954 that it was like weird and creepy. And so I always made it a point not to make it violent, not to have any sex or anything like that in it. And I remember one year, one of the early ones, we had Santa who was supposed to be like straight, like normal jolly Santa Claus. And the person that played him like made him like dirty and mean. And it really annoyed me. I'm like, no, this is everything in the world is dirty and crass and violent. And the point of this is to be weirdly clean. But the past two ones, this one and last year especially, which was super violent. This one was kind of violent. I've had some violence and some suggestions of sex and the seedier sides of the world and the thing. Why do you think that is? And do you think next year we should go back to strictly G-rated to the point where it's weird and quirky as it's that extremely G-rated?
Isn't the violent ones even weird as well? I was like, everything is weird. I was like, punk news is weird. I think you should go on whatever path you want to, whatever creative outlet you need to get out. I think if you mixed it up, it would be fine. Like if you did, like, you know, maybe an adaptation of like Charlie Brown Christmas next year, or, you know, if you want to go to another violent one, that's also fine. I don't know how many kids or younger people is actually listening to this, so I don't really think we need to go that G-rated. You know?
I almost did do Charlie Brown Christmas this year, but it was too sacred. I didn't want to mess with it, so that's why I did this noir thing that when, I mean, I didn't even know how it was going to end when I started writing it. And then all of a sudden we've got Frosty the Snowman putting Jeff Bezos in a trash compactor. And that's just how it went. Sam, one thing I want to address, and then we're going to address another random thing and then actually get into this week's news. You said that you're jaded. Sam, I don't think you're jaded. Do you think you're jaded?
Yeah. Yeah, I think living in New York and dealing what I've dealt with living here, I'm extremely jaded. I'm just like, okay, whatever. Especially this year. I think this year was very hard on everyone. You know, it's been a really rough year. It's been awful for most. You know, I think that punk news brings a little joy to my life, and I'm going to keep it that way.
kick ass. Well, Sam, I'm loving that now that you're back on the podcast a little bit more often. One other thing, and actually this goes along the line of Jada, and I'm glad you and I can have this discussion, because I've had this discussion with Adam on the podcast a couple of times, and he kind of shifts away from it. And if you want to shift away from it too, that's fine. I was listening to another podcast today, and I got really annoyed. And this is not an uncommon phenomenon. This is actually somewhat of a regular phenomenon, in that people that have invested significant amount of time into punk news, then they say, I'm not going to kind of do punk news anymore. I'm going to kind of shift away, do my own thing, or, you know, just take a break for a while, which is cool. I get that 100%. The point of punk news isn't necessarily you come here and this is where you stay. Punk news certainly can be a stepping stone to other things, and that is a very valid reason to use punk news as a stepping stone. Actually, it's probably the most valid reason to use punk news as a stepping stone to other things that you want to get to. But what annoys me is this is not a – this phenomenon has happened at least like 7 times. People that have contributed a lot to punk news, and they step away or they drift away or they kind of fade out, but then they have like some sort of resentment towards punk news. And I see them on Facebook and on Twitter, like taking not like direct shots at punk news, but like side shots at punk news. And I don't even mean this as like an angry statement. I mean this as a genuine flat statement. I don't understand why people do that. Why do when some people that leave punk news of their own accord, not kicked out, they say, you know, I got a kid now. Or, you know, I've got a new job or I'm moving. I'm not really going to do punk news anymore. They fade themselves out. But they have like some sort of resentment towards punk news and they take shots at what we do. And that really bums me out because, like, we'll just say Bill Jones quits punk news. And Bill Jones has been working at punk news. Bill Jones has been contributing to punk news for 4 years. And we know Bill. Bill's been a reviewer or Bill's even been an editor. And then he leaves and you know, he's like, thank God I quit punk news. Like, what a waste of time that was, or bullshit like that. It's like, not only are you striking at punk news, but you're striking at me, your friends. Like, you know that I'm still involved with punk news. So why are you dogging on punk news, something that you know your friend is still contributing his time to and is trying to make cool? Have you noticed this phenomenon, and do you want to comment on it? And if you don't want to, don't feel pressured to.
I think, so, like, you know, people move on from punk news. They should. I was like, they totally should. I don't think that people realize that punk news is like, you know, we're all contributors to it. We're not getting paid to do this. You know, we're still human. We do make mistakes and, you know, whatever. I think that, like, you know, when you step away from something that you're actively involved with for a long, long time, you then think about all of the time that you spent or whatever. People might have resentment towards it because, you know, they literally have worked their ass off here, right? And they have gotten nothing in return. But, you know, I do think that, like, you know, when you're working for a publication of some sort, right, I was like, most of them are not paying unless you're going to, like, Rolling Stones or, like, you know, the bigger ones that's still surviving. I was like, punk news has been on the internet. I was like, the internet is free. We're not, you know, we don't get paid for this. You know, it's, I don't know. I do punk news for the love of punk. I'm not doing it to get famous off of the site, clearly. I'm also not doing it for all of the perks that you might think we get, because we don't get much.
I love what you said, to put out an open call for reviewers, and they're like, yeah, so I'm going to need access to this. I'm going to need lots of free records. I'm going to need this. And I'm like, you probably want to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Like, you know, we don't get free records. I was like, we're living in an age where we're not, especially now, like this year, I was like, we're not mailing each other things. We're not getting tons and tons of physical vinyl, you know. It's a lot of digital. It's a lot of, you know, emails back and forth. So I don't think that people realize, like, you know, we do a lot of work on in the behind the scenes type of stuff, like a lot of, like, electronic stuff. I'm not doing punk news because I'm gonna get famous on this. That's not happening. Clearly. I do it because I want to. I do it because of community. I was like, you know, I was like, you and Adam has been, like, you know, there from the start since I started. I think it's been like 8 years this year or something like that. It's been X amount of years. You know, and we just do what we do. That's what we do.
So is what you're expressing to me that you do agree, maybe you don't agree, but don't put words in your mouth, but there is a trend for some people that have invested a lot into punk news to kind of take a sour angle towards it once they stop contributing. And a possible reason for that sour angle once they stop contributing is that they look back at all the time they invested and they're sort of mad at themselves for, quote, wasting all that time. Is that what you're suggesting?
It's possible. I don't know what the reasons are of why anyone would, you know, feel however way. You know, I'm just talking about it as a human aspect of, like, you know, me, just, I guess, like, me in real world, like, you know, sometimes I don't realize what is happening in front of me until I step away, and then I'm like, oh, you know, that was a hot mess. What am I doing? What was I doing? But, you know, I'm a different person. I may take that and say, oh, that's a learning. That was me learning how to do this, that, and a third. So, you know, I've worked a lot of jobs. I've done a lot of things. And, you know, there's been so many times where I've just, like, sat there and said, wow, that really sucked. I spent 6 years doing this, and I have no idea. But, you know, I use that, and I move on.
I hear that. It just bums me out that when people I know that I contribute to Punk News, they're like, yeah, Punk News, that sucks. It's like, bro, like, I'm your pal. Like why are you dissing on the site and therefore dissing on me? I don't know. I don't understand people. But that's always been a part of Punk. Sam, let's play a track. Do you want to play a track? Or do you want me to play a track?
I could play a track.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's this French band. They're kind of cool. They're called Water Tank. They put out an album this year called Silent Running, and I think it's actually on my end of the year list. So I'm going to play Envision.
And that was envisioned by, what was that, Splatter Tank, Sam?
Water Tank.
By Water Tank from Francais. Let's hit a little bit of news, and then we'll see if Sam and I agree or disagree. Sam, I think you and I actually have a pretty non-overlapping taste in music. Like our favorite bands probably don't intersect that much, correct?
Yeah, no.
So maybe we'll get interesting set of opinions here. First thing that I want to mention, though, is the Village Voice. The Village Voice, I guess, stopped operating about 2 years ago now. It stopped operating after someone had bought it from the entity that owned it. That guy tried to run it for 3 years, and he wound it down, and he closed it. And so it seemed that the Village Voice, a extremely famous, long run, maybe the most famous weekly there was, went out of business and even stopped an online presence. And now it's coming back. The interesting thing about the website coming, Village Voice coming back, and a website and as a quarterly newspaper, is the owner. The new owner is a guy called David Calais. And you say, John, who's David Calais? David Calais, if the listeners remember, is basically the guy that ran the entity that also bought the LA Weekly about 2 years ago. It was a big hubbub 2 years ago when the LA Weekly was bought by a mysterious group of investors who refused to identify themselves. And after the LA Weekly was bought, then almost everybody was fired and the company was completely gutted. And they actually put out like a mandate saying, you must write about this, you must not write about that. And then eventually, I guess just the community kind of said, we want to know who these owners are. And it turns out the owners were David Calais and a couple of other people that had connections to some pretty right-wing organizations, including a right-wing organization called the Colburn Institute, who had the main goal of introducing conservative viewpoints, extremely conservative viewpoints, into the media and influencing the media through the purchase of papers and publications in order to get a more conservative voice out there and kind of push back against, I guess, those evil liberals. And what surprised me the most about this, so that guy bought the LA Weekly and he fired everybody. It was a huge deal. I mean, I don't know if the listeners remember. It was a big deal. Rollins was involved in it and he said, I'm quitting because of these. I don't want to be with these people. It was a huge, huge deal about how LA Weekly, one of the most famous alt weeklies, was bought out by a extremely or significantly right-wing guy who actually had like a background with regard to sneaky media communications and trying to influence the media, but indirectly. So people didn't know that it was being influenced. You compare, if you look at like Rush Limbaugh is like, I'm a right-wing guy and here's what I think. Whereas this David Calais guy, his strategy was not to let people know that the right wing, but kind of just silence certain voices and push other voices subtly, which honestly may or may not be a more effective strategy in converting the general populace's viewpoint. I don't know. I don't know. I would say it would definitely be, but then with Trump this whole year, simply stating I'm a bigot seemed to work pretty good, honestly. Anyways, so that's this David Calais guy. He bought the New York Village Voice, and All the publications, this blew my mind, Sam, all the New York Times, the other big one in New York, I think it was not New York Post, another one of the big ones.
Daily News?
Daily News, and another, they were like, great news, Village Voice is back. David Calais bought it. And that was the article. And I'm like, holy shit, this is the guy. Like, no one really mentions. Some people have like a few like small lines here. They're like, you know, David Calais also bought the Village Voice, and there's some controversy. Anyways, you know, like none of them talked about like how it was like this big hostile takeover, I guess, or it's technically not a hostile takeover, but a unpleasant takeover, an unhappy takeover that of this sneaky conservative guy. And I'm not saying if you're conservative, you're bad, but I'm saying this guy is a bad conservative guy, and he's a sneaky dude, and he's part of organizations that are totally sketch. And so this guy that totally gutted and destroyed the LA Weekly is now taking over the Village Voice, the two biggest weeklies in America, maybe the world. And no one is like pointing out that this is a sketchy guy doing the same exact thing he did to LA 3 years ago, 2 years ago. No one mentioned it really except for us. I mean, a couple people had like a few sidelines, but we made a point of why did no one mention this, Sam? Did no one focus on this? Because with Trump and all that, this is just such small potatoes. Did no one mention it just because no one realized it? Did no one mention it just because people have short mind spans? Or did no one mention it because his plan of subtly manipulating the media is working? It's scary.
So the Village Voice has a very, very sweet spot in my heart because essentially that is what I grew up, like, you know, grabbing. Like, I would grab that and see if there's, like, you know, a punk show happening, or, you know, I would, like, look at the cover and be like, ooh, who is this person, you know, because it was, like, free, you know, and in the streets, and, you know, when you're hanging around, that's sometimes what you do. I don't know why it totally escaped a lot of people's minds. I think that with everything that has happened, because this was, you know, pretty recent, like what, it came out like yesterday or something like that. I was like, I think with everything that has happened with like COVID and stuff like that, that has literally taken over normal television, right? I was like, I watch the news every day with my husband, and you know, we, I was like, this definitely would not hit even New York news, right? And I live here, because of everything else. I think there has been a lot of things that happened this year that got drowned out because of between COVID or this lovely administration we have here. You know, whatever happens usually drowns out smaller news. I don't think this is good. At all that this guy is taking over. When I read the article that was posted, I was like, are you serious? I was like, it's, you know, the Village Voice was shut down, so it's not like, you know, he's it's not like he's firing a whole bunch of people. He's probably just bringing in people that fits his agenda, right?
I agree with that 100%. Yes.
Yeah. Like the only thing that's coming out of this is the fact that, you know, what we know of the Village Voice is not going to be the Village Voice anymore. So, you know, so that entire, like, you know, history is now shot down a big black hole, right? Which sucks because, you know, the Village Voice is a thing that if you're from New York, you know, or was around New York, you know, prior to 2018, like, you've seen around every corner, you know. But isn't that what 2020 is? A hot shit show.
What I was going to say, that I can't remember. Yeah, it distressed me how no one mentions, but maybe it is just too much noise and people just can't even get to it. Get to it. What was I going to mention with regards to the Village Voice? Anyways, it's a bummer. It's sad. It sucks how, like, sneaky people are increasingly taking over the media and just being sneaky, man. It sucks. Anyways, let's talk about something that doesn't suck, although some people say it did. Jesse Michaels is starting a T-shirt company, or rather a clothing design company. He's going to be doing some of the designs, and other artists are going to be doing some of the other designs. The first T-shirt that they released is like kind of like different Jesse Michaels sketches, and the Punk News commenter base had very mixed reactions on this, and that really did surprise me because, like, Jesse Michaels is like the man, right? Jesse and Ian MacKay, like those two guys are basically bulletproof, and people don't say anything bad about them at all. I do notice that within the past 2 years or so, Jesse, and not by the fault of Jesse has, you know, he put out a hardcore EP, which was amazing. He put out the classical LP. Jesse Michaels, to me, is as bulletproof and amazing as ever. But I do see, whereas Operation Ivy used to be heralded as like this absolutely perfect thing that's untouchable, I do see people taking more and more shots at Jesse. And some of the commenters looked at this T-shirt and someone's like, this just looks like my high school yearbook. My high school notebook that I sketched on. Sam, looking at this T-shirt, did you think this T-shirt was cool, or is this just some random sketches that are not suitable or what's the word I'm looking for? Able to rise to the level of high or semi-high fashion and or streetwear?
Art is art, right? And, you know...
Art major, right?
Yeah, I went to art school, and I was an art history major, but I would have to say art is art. And if this guy, you know, he created this entire, I guess, like, company, right, idea of all these T-shirt designs. I don't necessarily like this T-shirt. Other people may want to spend $33 on a T-shirt. But, you know, there's other artists out there that I, you know, do not like that also does put their art on T-shirts. and, you know, label, like, you know, upcharge it to, like, you know, $50 or something like that, and people do buy it. So I think it, you know, depends whether or not you're a fan or not. I do think that t-shirts are accessible, especially since, like, you know, if you get artists' prints and stuff like that, they may be up to, like, you know, $200 for, you know, an art piece for your wall in your house. I do think that t-shirts are also free advertising, you know, when you're walking around and stuff like that, right? So I do think that, you know, I would like to see where this goes, because if he's promising other artists, like a lot of the bands that we listen to, a lot of the bands that we like on the site, they're also artists too. So I wonder who he's going to get to, you know, contribute something to this.
You know, fashion is so difficult, because you see some t-shirts, you know, done by cool people or artists that go for $200, $300, $400 each. And you see, like, famous people wearing them. And you're like, that's a $400 t-shirt? And then you see, like, what you think is, like, the raddest thing ever. And it's, like, a $15 shirt that no one's buying. And so I don't know. And I don't know if anyone knows why certain, you know, higher-end or mid-level fashion becomes, like, you know, super chic fashion. I'm talking about guys like Basquiat, who's a great artist, but why is he why is he way more famous than, you know, even like he's more famous than Salvador Dali, he's almost more famous than Warhol. Why is he, and why is Warhol as famous as Warhol is, you know? Sam, do you know the name of the artist? It's like David something. He does like the dancing people that are basically like very simple.
Keith Haring, and he is my favorite artist.
Right. So why is Keith Haring, like, so exceptional, for example?
Well, I think it goes down to whether or not you make art accessible, right? I was like, the thing about Keith Haring that I love is the fact that he had the Pop Shop, which was a shop that was in, Lafayette Street in Manhattan for many, many years. And even until, like, I was a teenager, like, my husband actually dragged me in the Pop Shop for the first time. And I was like, oh, my God, I love this. But, you know, he took art and he made it accessible. I was like, the same thing with Basquiat and the same thing with, you know, like Warhol. I was like, Warhol took images that was accessible, and, you know, he produced them into what you would classify as fine art, right? And he sold it as upcharge, which is what, you know, helped afford certain things for him. I think it comes down to accessibility. Like, you know, I see, you know, Uniqlo picks up on, you know, like, I think Basquiat, Warhol, and Keith Haring prints and mass produces it now. So you see a lot more of that happening. You know, it's the art market. The art market is weird. It really, really is. I was like, if you can get yourself out there and people can recognize you, then that is a good thing sometimes.
Let's actually dive into this a little bit more. I'm a huge fan of the band Lotion. That's L.O.T. Yep. I love that band. Sam and I saw that band at a Strike Anywhere show in Asbury Park. It was Lotion, Dark Thoughts, Strike Anywhere, and Mean Jeans. What a lineup.
Yep.
The main guy, or the singer behind Lotion, is he calls himself Death Trader, Alexander Hare. And he does these really cool designs that I dig a lot. Actually, last year, right before COVID, I bought a super rad jacket from him. I think it's super rad. And I haven't even gotten to worn it yet because of COVID. So, like, I didn't want to wear this rad jacket, like, out to the supermarket. Like, I wanted to wear it to a punk show and say, check it out, punkers. I've got this rad jacket. Check it out, you know. And so he has a shop called Death Traders. And he does, like, these – actually, I don't know if they're limited runs, but he does, like, T-shirts, gloves, bandanas. And he puts his relatively unique design on them, and they sell out like crazy. And recently, within the past 2 months or so, a lot of extremely famous hip-hop people have been, like, wearing his designs on Instagram. FKA Twigs, SZA, or SZA. Is that SZA? Or how do they say her name? SZA?
I have no idea. No idea. I listen to popular music, but I don't listen to a lot of it.
So a lot of like the super, not the Kanyes, not the Beyoncés, but the hipper ones just under that, like FKA Twigs, like SZA, like Khalid. Those people have been, that level of artists have been wearing this guy Alexander Hare's designs. And A, Sam, that makes me not want to wear my jacket that I've been dying to wear for a year, because, well, maybe it's going to go way up in value, like a Warhol, you know what I mean? But on the other hand, like, I think his designs are mega cool, right? But why are his designs becoming, like, the hottest design and not somebody else's? Here's the question, and I don't know, Sam, so maybe you don't know. Why are Alexander's Hare designs, which are very cool, why are they, like, the thing to wear right now, whereas someone else isn't? Like, is it just because the design is unique? Or is it just because he's lucky? Or is it just because, like, one super cool person said it was cool, so then all the other super cool people said it was cool, too, and so he essentially just got lucky in that this one super cool person liked his design and not Joe Schmo from down the street who has another interesting, equally cool design that's different that didn't ever blow up?
Maybe a little of everything you just said, really.
Do you think his designs are somewhat I think his designs are pretty rad. They look like they were like pulled from like a early 80s textbook kind of, and he uses like some Terminator 2 imagery. Sam, do you dig his designs, or do you think his designs are cliche and old, like I guess old fashioned? What do you or maybe you have no opinion?
I have no opinion on it. But like, you know, I could see why people are into it right now. I was like, you know, it's funny. I was like, I don't know how celebrities get into like finding punk things. I don't know if it's networking. I don't know if they're just like really hip and in. Definitely someone had to have told someone related to them, right, about this. Because I do think it's very specific.
Do you think, like, a lot of super famous celebrities and even semi super famous celebrities, people like Megan Thee Stallion, and even not even, although she's pretty famous now, they have clothing buyers, and it's that person's sole job is to go buy this person cool clothes so the person looks cool and gets in the media and so forth. Do you think maybe like a buyer is like into like do you actually, I can almost bet this is the truth. I can almost bet that the buyers monitor the underground and pull things from the underground and bring them to the mainstream, and they blow up in the mainstream. I'm almost sure that's exactly how it happens.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Anyways, Sam, should I wear my cool Alexander Hare jacket, or should I let it sit for another year or two and see if it explodes in value?
I think you should let it sit for another year or two. I don't know if we're going out anytime soon.
Fair enough. Let's see, Sam. You want to talk? Let's talk about David Bowie. David Bowie is actually. Hey, it's a question, Sam. You know I'm a mega David Bowie fan. Are you a David Bowie fan, or is that not your thing?
Not my thing, but I get it. Really?
Well, David Bowie is putting out another live album. It's part of his Live in the '90s series. It's like Adventures Outside or something. And what's interesting, it's five live albums from the 90s. And what's interesting about the series is this is pretty much regarded as Bowie's weakest period. And so the label that's putting it out, or the Bowie Estate, they're not saying, well, they're specifically targeting an area that is the most underlooked about Bowie's period, Bowie's career, because most people think it's his least interesting period or his rockiest period. That's kind of an era when David Bowie didn't really know where to go. You know, he'd done the 70s, he'd been king of the 80s, 90s. He kind of made it through grunge because all the grunge guys loved him. But in the 2000s, EDM was coming around, and David Bowie didn't quite figure out how to fit in. By 2010 or so, you know, the Next Day album, the Heathen album, he really kind of came back and was like David Bowie again. But the 90s were his, I would say his weakest period musical output wise. And so they're putting out five live albums from that period, as opposed to say five live albums from the 70s, which I think pretty much everyone agrees was his strongest period. Sam, do you think it's interesting that the David Bowie estate is focusing on an artist's weakest segment of their career, perhaps to make the argument that it's been overlooked, or also perhaps to avoid overmining the 70s? Because at this point, I think it's like six or seven live David Bowie albums from the 70s. I think there's three or four from the 80s. So maybe they're just trying to avoid overmining one particular area, and they're trying to go into an area that a lot of listeners might not know about, or maybe they're hitting the bottom of the barrel and this is all they got left. What's your opinion of a label focusing on a heralded artist's least popular period? I'm trying to think of an example that might be more relevant to your interests. Let's see here. Like, you're a Lawrence Arms fan, right, Sam?
Yes.
Oh, I thought. Like, what's your favorite band, Sam, or one of your favorite bands?
If you don't know the answer to that by now, I don't know what to tell you.
Bouncing Souls. My bad. Sam, would you be interested if the Bouncing Souls put out five live albums from, say, 2010 to 2015? Would that be interesting to you, or would you rather have like 90s live albums from the Bouncing Souls?
I'll take anything from the Bouncing Souls at this point. So, yeah, so I think it's interesting that they are focusing on one decade. They're not doing it with any of the other decades. They're just doing it with the 90s with this thing.
So they've put out many archival releases from the 70s and 80s, but this is the first time they're specifically saying we are doing five live albums from this decade, from this general time period, with the specific intent to focus on this underrepresented period.
Okay, well, if they've been doing it already for the 70s and 80s, I would understand them doing it for the 90s. And I do understand, like, you know, them specifically saying that they're focusing on the 90s, possibly because maybe no one cares about it or no one knows about it. You know, I do see that as a thing because it's, you know, they've done it for the other decades. They might actually do it for, you know, the more current decades. Who knows? But yeah, I looked at this and I was like, oh, interesting. I was like, you know, they seem to really want to curate this. You know, so I'm glad they're putting something together, and we'll see how that goes. I wonder how pre-sale goes. I don't know.
Actually, what's interesting about this is these are only available through the David Bowie website, and they have all sold out so far, so I'm making sure I'm getting mine, because even if they're not that good, I still want them because I'm a David Bowie maniac. Sam, tell me if I'm stupid, because they said we're putting out five live albums, but you can also buy a cardboard box specifically made to put these five live albums in. You don't get anything else with this item. You just get the box, and you have to buy the album separately, and you can put them in the box, and the box is like $15. So, Sam, I bought the cardboard box. Am I a sucker?
Oh, wait. So they sold a box?
They sold a cardboard box that had like a picture of David Bowie on it, and it said like the 90s collection.
Okay, they're really milking this, and they really know how to get your money. That's what they just did. Like, I would assume that, like, you know, if they if I was a record label putting weird things out, I would say, here is a package of all of them, you get a free box, or maybe, you know, and put the price of the box with it, like, you know, make one of those merch now packages and just sell it like that. I was like, the fact that you had to separately put a cardboard box in your cart is wow.
It's a nice box. Honestly, I don't even want to. Oh, this is so, Sam, this is so stupid. I don't even want to open it because, you know, I'm a record collector, but I'm also a record listener. I it's rare that I buy a record or a CD and don't have the intention to listen to it. But it came like in Saran wrap, and it's got like a bunch of styrofoam inside. So I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't open it just to keep it in me.
Cardboard box. I would have it was like, you know, like one of those nice box sets that, you know, like they printed and stuff like that, or like even a wooden box. Like, that's cool. I would spend money on a wooden box, but like a cardboard box.
It says David Bowie, Brilliant Live Adventures on it, and it's got a picture of David Bowie like putting his hands in the air, and that's about all it does.
Oh my God. John, you're going to do whatever you need to do with it. If you don't open it, I understand.
That actually raises another issue, Sam, that I'm glad you brought up, and maybe we'll do one more story after this. More and more bands, like bands who have used to sell, you know, you want a CD, you want a record. Also, we have T-shirts if you want to buy T-shirts. Now, bands are always doing pre-sales, and they're always doing, you can get a T-shirt too, or you can get a slip mat, or you can get a Snuggie, you know, when you buy our record. What's your opinion of bands, like, including extras on the sale, and do you buy the extras? I'll tell you, like, I'm a big Ceremony fan, even like Modern Ceremony, and with their last proper album, In the Spirit World Now, they had a Rubik's Cube that came with it, because somehow a Rubik's Cube symbolized the album somehow, and I'm not even sure how. So I bought the Rubik's Cube with it, and I got it, and I'm like, I literally like spent like $15 for a 50-cent Rubik's Cube. Like, that's all this is. I felt like such an idiot, honestly, you know. Because like the record was like 25, but if you got the Rubik's Cube, it was like 38, but or like 35. But like the shipping went way up too, you know. So I literally spent like 15 bucks on a stupid Rubik's Cube. It's not like not a generic off-brand Rubik's Cube, that like it's just Rubik's Cube, you know. Like,
You're not paying for medium mail anymore. You're paying for like whatever it is that, you know, whatever Rubik's Cube would be for shipping at this point, like 10 bucks.
So am I an idiot for buying this, the official Ceremony Rubik's Cube? And what's your opinion of bands, including Knickknacks, with their album releases? And do you buy them? And if you buy them, do you feel good about the purchase when you get it? Or do you kind of feel like a sucker, like I did when I got this stupid Rubik's Cube that I look at every day, frowning?
So me and my husband, we collect records, right? We have a lot of records, and we're actually dealing with some of it right now. And we are suckers for crazy merch packages sometimes. To me, usually it comes down to what color it is, like a specific variant, and like, you know, or whatever. So sometimes I have been suckered into merch packages. Usually it's not like a super overly elaborate merch package. Like, if the merch package is like you're getting a silkscreen jacket and 5 mugs and a skateboard deck, I'm usually not down for that. If it's like, you know, a record and with a special cover and like, you know, maybe a stress ball, I might be down for that if it's like, you know, affordable or under $100, you know, something like that. If it's like reasonable, then I would go for that. Sometimes it's also about numbers, you know, pressing numbers, because I can be one of those people sometimes. I understand why people would do that, from a perspective of, I guess, you know, a label. You know, you can sell more things by putting more things in it and marketing it with like a rarer item, right? So like, if there is a record that is out of 100 and you put it in a crazy merch package, and the lowest cost of a merch package is like $65, you're gonna get a subset of people that's like, oh well, I need that, you know, copy, I need that variant, so I'm gonna spend $65 and get all of this stuff. Sometimes the stuff actually makes sense with the album. I think my husband bought the latest Fiddlehead 7-inch. I forgot what the 7-inch is called, but it came with a little stress ball that looks like a a brain or something. And I'm like, you know, that's cool. Cause it actually, I think it actually went with something. I was like, oh, that's, I could use that. That's fine. Or I did get a pup record with a coloring book attached to it, which I found very enjoyable and delightful. You know, things like that. Or we actually did buy the Bouncing Souls coffee, and it came with a mug, and that made sense, you know.
That actually brings up one other issue, is like sometimes bands will start to exclude. I remember when Beastie Boys put out Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, I got like the Mega Deluxe one that came with a t-shirt, and I've never worn the t-shirt. And like, if something comes with some kind of cool merch, I like never open it. I'm like, oh, I gotta keep that mint, which I guess is stupid, really. Like I still have my mint Beastie Boys t-shirt from Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, because that was the only – it's not like you could just buy that t-shirt. That was the only place you could get it. So I'm like, well, I want to keep the collection as perfect as I can. So I don't know. I'm just a sucker. For me, one thing that I would always love is when a band includes extra music, like a live album or maybe even some demos. Screaming Females did an awesome job with their last album, where they had – you could buy the 2-disc version or the 3-disc version that came with demos that were radically different than the album. But – yeah, so I think both Sam and I support bands including wacky stuff. I always want things that are directly connected to the band somehow, you know, either extra recordings or, you know, maybe a different color. I'm not too big on press. Sam, like, I don't really care about pressing colors too much. Like, I'll buy the most rarest one just because if in the event that I resell the record, then it'll be the highest value one. But I really don't care about record color at all. Sam, I believe you are a fan of record colors, aren't you?
Yeah, I prefer record colors that match the album art. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with me, it's a toss up between the numbers, right, and the actual color that it comes in. Sometimes it doesn't matter. I was like, sometimes I just prefer, oh, this matches the album art to a T. I want that one, you know. Yeah, it depends. Depends on the album. It depends on things. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Sam and I agree that it is cool when bands include extra stuff, and if that helps keep bands afloat, then I'm down with it. My advice is just don't make it too expensive. When I see something that's like double or triple the price, I'm just not into it. You know, maybe something that makes it like 40% more expensive, I'm down with, but not like these like $70, $80, $100, $150 packages. And it bums me out when they have like a $150 package, and that's the only way you can get like the rare music. Like, it makes you feel like a sucker. And it makes you feel like the band's really trying to milk you. So, I don't know. That's just my advice. Sam, let's play a song. Sam, would you like to hear Melvins? Would you like to hear Zygote, the post-Amoebics band? Or would you like to hear some obscure new wave track that I recently uncovered? Or would you like to hear, let's see. That. What do you want to hear, Sam? Obscure new wave track, Zygote, the post-Amoebics band, or Melvins tune?
New wave all day.
All right, let's play a new wave track. As I've mentioned on the Punkish podcast a little while ago, is I've been on a new wave rampage, just like going through the dollar bin and just finding new wave records. Some are so crappy, some are so awesome, and some are just okay. The vast majority are just okay, but some of them are like super awesome. This one I'm going to play, I think, falls in the category of very, very cool. I would play – oh, no. I'm going to play something super awesome. This is a band called Quarks, which is a obscure band. They only self-released one EP once in like 1979, and there's a whole bunch of bands called Quarks, but this is Quarks from New York. They've got a 4-track EP, and this song is rad. This is the Quarks, and we'll be right back.
Lately, I've had dreams. Lately, familiar scenes. Lately, I'm dreaming all the time. Lately, trapped in their design. I've had
mind. Oh, it's day in my mind. It's Sandflush preoccupation. And if I look, I find I'm somewhere lost in time. Lately, I dream my life away. Lately, I look for dreams to save. Lately, I've got nothing else to do. So lately, I dream about you. Everywhere I go, it seems the same. I'm somewhere stuck in time and in this silly game. But maybe someday I'll change my ways and stop these senseless dreams that occupy my days. It's Sandflush preoccupations, the dreams I design always stay in my mind. It's Sandflush preoccupations, and if I look, I find I'm somewhere lost in time.
And Sam, that was the Quarks. It's been, you know, Sam, I always love the Sam and John and Sam just hanging out, shooting the shit, you know, palling around, talking about punk, talking about this, talking about that, relaxed episode. Always a pleasure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't need complicated right now.
I thought Sam was like, nah, I didn't really enjoy it, John. I thought it was. So listen, next week, we're going to do our end of year episode, which is always one of my favorite episodes. I love the end of year episode. Everybody's going to be on that one. We're going to be playing a ton of songs. Sam, anything else you think the listeners should know about or should hear about or should think about or should listen to?
Not really. Just, you know, support local music and support the struggling bands out there. Buy tickets to go see them from your couch. You know, do things like that. Good things.
Sam, not to drag this episode out, there are a number of online New Year's Eve shows. The Melvins are doing one. Fat Mike was going, NoFX was going to do one, but they canceled it. There's a couple other ones that are going to. Colin Haveman at Work is doing one. As a consumer of the musics, do you watch the online streaming shows, and would you be interested in a New Year's Eve online streaming show, or is that no different than like a YouTube video and it's not that interesting?
I have been supporting online streaming shows. I have been paying for tickets to see things. Right now, this might be the only way that we can see quote unquote live music, and support the bands that, you know, we love. I've been doing it. It's not the same. I, you know, do miss screaming into the air as, you know, a band's in front of me. I don't miss beer getting poured on me, or people pushing, but, you know, I am okay with a pause of live music. I mean, me in a physical space right now and just enjoying it, enjoying music from my couch, just as long as it's crunchy guitars right now, because I am a little over the acoustic thing 24/7.
Yes. Well said. Sam, you have the acoustic guitar. So am I. You can always use the podcast at punknews.org. Sam, thanks for being here, and we'll see you all next week.